Cape Talk. Call Pippa now on 021-446-0567.
Well, we go from one author conversation, because that was the author of 6 Days with Al-Qaeda, with Tudor Caradoc-Davies, of course, the award-winning book about Stephen's experience in the desert. And once again, if you haven't yet read it, do yourself a favour and get hold of a copy. We go from that to a completely different kind of story in today's edition of Book Club. It's a book that touches on several issues that I think are relevant to the current 16 Days of Activism campaign. It is a non-fiction memoir, and it speaks to the issue of coercive control and abuse of women and children. Now, the author Diane Harding lives in the UK, but she spent a good chunk of her childhood right here in Cape Town, growing up here during the apartheid era. And her book called Always in the Dark explores a scandal, I think we can call it that, a scandal that was hidden behind closed doors in the leafy southern suburbs. Speculation must have abounded, but polite society at the time meant nobody ever asked what was really going on inside Diane's home. And the most extraordinary thing about it is that Diane herself didn't really have an inkling until late in adulthood, when a box of treasures left to her by her mother set her on the path to a really staggering personal discovery. It is my great pleasure to have her joining us on the line from Bath in the UK this afternoon. Diane Harding, welcome to Cape Talk.
Hello, Pippa. Nice to speak. Thank you for inviting me on your program.
It's a great pleasure, and thank you for sharing this incredible story with us. We can't have the conversation with giving away some without giving away some spoilers, but I don't think it matters, Diane, because the real meat of the book is in the reading of how it played out rather than the what itself. So forgive me in advance if I let one or two things slip. Basically, the story is told through the eyes of Diane, the adult, who finally comes to understand what Diane, the child, was actually witnessing and experiencing, and how much she simply never saw it all. And Diane, reading it, I thought of the famous princess who said, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded. Mm-hmm. Unlike Princess Di's situation, the third party in this one wasn't engaging in sneaky phone calls and secret meetings. She was living under the same roof as your mother and father. To set us off before we talk about how you discovered this, can you just sketch for us very briefly what was actually going on?
Well, I was just three when Connie arrived in Cape Town for a holiday. And in those initial months, I was an only child. I mean, that's another story in itself. Mm-hmm. But I reveled in having a new playmate, someone I could involve in my make-believe world. But as time went on, I began to sense that there were uncomfortable undercurrents that I didn't understand and caused me confusion. And it was clear that my mother was deeply troubled as well. She became agoraphobic. She had mental breakdowns, which meant that involved me trying to care for her at that tender age. It was very difficult indeed. And she, having her there, just impinged on every aspect of my home life and growing up with my parents. She obviously, when you're young, from the tender age of three, you don't question why there's a particular piece of furniture in the room or why someone's living with you. It's just normal, although it was far from normal. And she accompanied us absolutely everywhere, every outing, cinema, shopping, when we went to the beach, camping, holiday, whatever it was, there was another person present.
Diane, what fascinated me is that questions must have been asked. It's not the norm for someone to go to the year-end Christmas party and take not just their wife, but their wife plus another woman, to have two effective wives in tow when going shopping and on holiday. The neighbours must have been talking. Your family and friends must have been talking. And yet you, as the child in the house, had absolutely no idea that Aunt Connie was more than just Aunt Connie. And you didn't know until literally in your 50s. I mean, it speaks to how the lengths that society will go to not to ripple the waters, not to pry into other people's business and not to speak about these things. It was a long time ago, Diane, but do you think the same still applies today?
Well, obviously, back then, these things just were not discussed, unlike every matter is discussed with children in this day and age. Back then, nothing. It had all been very cleverly disguised, hidden from me. I mean, I think back sometimes, well, was there anything that might have given me clues about this? But there really, really wasn't. No. Mm. And as you said, it wasn't until my mother died decades later that I rummaged in her secret box. I wasn't really aware she had any secrets. I knew she'd had a divorce eventually. And I unearthed all these shocking facts that really took me off my axis. I just had no idea that all this was going on, and the humiliation that poor dear must have suffered must have been outrageous. And yes, taking people to office parties and all with someone in tow, it seemed people obviously were talking about it. One of the neighbours that I'm in touch with, who lived opposite, yes, he knew, obviously, through his parents. We must have been the talk of the town, and wherever we went.
And you knew nothing. Diane, it also speaks to the lengths that your mother went to protect you from the knowledge that your father had moved his mistress into the family home. How do you, I mean, in hindsight, how do you feel about the fact that she put herself through so much torment and stayed as long as she did, partly, in a huge part, to try and protect you from that knowledge?
Well, I think she deserves a medal for that. Mm-hmm. She really was a rare diamond. She was she had a very delicate nature, my mother. She had always wore her hair swept back in a bun, like a dark hair, like a ballerina. Mm-hmm. Gentle, always thought of others, put others first. But there must, to stick it out for my sake, there must have been a resilience about her, a steeliness, in order to be able to do that. And even when she, over there, she came to England for a couple of holidays, which obviously left me without a mother that I was so close to for 2 or 3 months on end, because it was a boat trip then, of course, in those days, she still returned, much as that her mother and her sisters over here had tried to persuade her to stay, but there was no way she was not coming back to face the awful situation. She was just prepared to come back and look after me. Hmm. Yes. So a wonderful lady. Yeah.
Diane, you used the phrase coercive control in your description of the book and the introduction to the book. Do you want to elaborate a little bit? I mean, it was more than partly, certainly, your mother's decision to stay in this terrible, humiliating situation she was in, where she felt an absolute lack of love as well, was partly driven by her desire to protect you and to care for you. But there were other reasons why she stayed. Perhaps a woman of 2021 would not have to endure that kind of situation, might have had different choices available to her, but those choices simply weren't there for your mother, were they?
Well, they weren't, because she lived obviously over there, had nobody she could confide in, turn to. It wasn't like, it wouldn't be like hopping on a bus today and just moving away somewhere. You just simply don't do that when you're on another continent. And I do wonder, I mean, my parents emigrated after the war. And I do wonder if perhaps my father, I think they had initially met, well, I know they had initially met during the war. And I wondered if perhaps they'd emigrated. Perhaps my mother thought that was far enough away to be out of the clutches of this person. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line from Bath in the UK is Diane Harding, who's recently published her memoir called Always in the Dark, describing the extraordinary journey of learning the full truth of her own childhood, because Diane grew up totally unaware of the fact that the third party in her parents' marriage was living in their home, and that the person she knew as Auntie Connie, who she knew as an interloper who was always in the way on family outings, was in fact much more than just a family friend. And she felt came to that knowledge after her own mother's death. Now, Diane, your dad was already gone by then, so you didn't really have the opportunity to confront him with what you had discovered. Do you feel any resentment for that fact? Do you feel like it would have been good for you to have the chance to confront him with what he had done to your mother?
Well, I think had he still been alive, yes, when I made this heinous discovery, absolutely, yes, I would have taken him to task, I'm sure. I've had people say that to me, actually, in when they've read the book, seeing me roundabout saying, I'd like to have a go at Dick.
Yeah. Diane, not just at Vic, but at Connie too. And the interesting thing was that when you discovered this, Connie herself was still alive. And in fact, you still had a relationship with her and saw her from time to time. And you write quite extensively about how much you tried to sort of prod her into being honest with you and perhaps even hearing an apology from her for what she'd put your mother through and you by default. That never came, though. Again, is that something you regret? Do you feel that maybe you lack a sense of closure over this issue because you never had the satisfaction of hearing her say, yes, I concede that that is what is happening?
Well, I held on, determined that I would get an apology. But I'd made up my mind that that apology would have to come from her. I was not going to lower myself to ask for it. Mm. And it was when she was in hospital, yes, that I was convinced that was coming. So very let down, I feel, about that one. Yes. And, well, goodness me.
Diane, carry on.
I was going to say, obviously, my closure, I might not have had that from her, but my closure came being able to put the record straight and write this story, which is something I used to say to my mother when things at home, trouble reared its head. I used to say to my mother, oh, I could write a book one day. But obviously back then, that was only half the story. Mm-hmm. Little did I know what was to come.
But the story
so I think
come,
in a way, that's been my closure. To my revenge, if you like, to put the record straight and just to let everybody know that my mother was not compliant in this situation whatsoever.
Yeah. That is obviously very important to you. Diane, for me, one of the saddest things reading your book was reading of how much of a burden of almost fear you felt that you it took you ages once you had made this discovery and received this knowledge, it still took you ages to be able to tell even your own husband because you felt such a deep sense of guilt and embarrassment at the sort of the tawdriness of it that I felt awful for you because it's not something you had any control over. You were just a child. But it is quite a typical response, isn't it, for somebody who has lived through abuse in any form to feel some kind of questioning of themselves and self-blame. Do you think that that's what that was that you were feeling? Perhaps a typical sort of trauma response, really?
I'm sure it probably was all coming out, yes. As you say, it took me 3 years from, I was on holiday from school. My mother had died a few weeks prior to that. And then my stepfather had died. I had all these boxes piled up in the spare room. And I thought, right, I'm really going to sort through these. And obviously there was this private box of my mother's. Wow. When I opened that, goodness gracious me. So I just, when he came home from work, my husband, I just pretended it was like any normal day and tried to get on living a normal life. It was difficult. But having made my discovery, there's a lot of stigma attached to that then.
Yeah.
And the shame of it. And, of course, with shame comes embarrassment. There was just no way that I could open up and tell him. And at the time, he didn't know. And my children didn't know. There was no way that I was going to tell them. Absolutely no way. Mm-hmm. So I just decided silence was my best option.
Gosh.
And it was after 3 years when he came back from the States. He'd been on a business trip. But I forewarned him that I texted him. I forewarned him that I had something to tell him because I thought I couldn't bottle out a bit then. And once I told him, well, it was just an enormous relief to know that I had actually got that off my chest.
Yeah.
It was almost like a cleansing process, so to speak. Yeah.
Real unburdening yourself of a bag that wasn't yours to carry in the first place. I mean, Diane, you've described writing the book as a form of revenge, of wanting to set the record straight, to know, let people know who remembered what was going on, that it wasn't by your mother's design or agreement. And you've certainly achieved that goal. What else has the writing process done for you? Has it perhaps provided a vehicle for you to talk to this more to your own children? Do you think it's impacted the way you've chosen to parent, for example?
I've learned to be much more open about things. I mean, like my mother, I've always been fairly secretive, perhaps because of this issue that I've had in my life. My work colleagues now they know about it and have read the book. They couldn't believe that I'd never spoken about it, opened up about it. So certainly, this is my mission now, to get people not to hold it, withhold anything, just to talk about it.
Yeah.
I think if you can talk about it, you're halfway there. I think by writing the book has allowed me to gradually talk about it, certainly. It's given me that leverage to be able to do that. And it's been liberating, of course.
Mm. Diane, I've got several listeners asking, where can we get hold of a copy of this book to read the story for ourselves? Now, I know you've been published in the UK by Black Dog Publishing. Is the book available in South African bookstores yet, or does one need to order through your publisher's website?
It's available at Exclusive Books,
okay.
Which you can order online through Exclusive Books. I know somebody messaged me to say she'd got a copy from Wordsworth.
Okay.
Obviously a bookshop at Steenberg, and of course Amazon available from, but I don't doubt you can get it from various bookshops.
And is it available in an e-book version or Kindle equivalent?
It's available in e-book, yes, but I don't know whether over where you are, whether you can get the e-book on Amazon. That I'm not sure about.
Okay, but the concept is out there, so with a little bit of digging and exploring, you might be able to find that whoever's asking specifically about the electronic version. Certainly that the printed copy available in stores now. Diane?
To order online, yeah.
Okay, to order online. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today and making time to chat to us, Diane. It was a really fascinating read on a different kind of abuse than the one we typically tend to focus on during the 16 days of activism against violence on women and children. Mm-hmm. It's a psychological and emotional abuse, which you have written with a really interesting perspective as somebody who grew up experiencing it without even really recognizing that that is what they were experiencing. And the perspective of making that discovery in adulthood for me was the most fascinating thing about this book, to see how your own sense of who you are and how you'd grown up was changed by this. Thank you very much for putting it all down in print, and thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Oh, thank you, Pippa, for having me. It's been an absolute thrill to talk to you. I feel I've been back in my birthplace.
You have, in a way. And Diane, hopefully it won't be long before we can all visit one another again and travel again between your birthplace and ours. Diane Harding on the line from Bath in the UK. And the book we've been discussing is called Always in the Dark. Her publisher's Black Dog Publishing. Their website is blkdogpublishing.com. If you want to go and search for Always in the Dark there. Otherwise, do look out for a printed copy in all the major bookstores.